This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. Excited to announce a brand new contest for listening on the Odyssey app. As always, you know that you can listen on 92.9 FM or 680 AM, but now Odyssey Sports is giving listeners the chance to win an epic trip. It's a flyaway to Las Vegas with three friends and $20,000 spending cash for the first two rounds of the college basketball tournament. Here's all you have to do. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to 92.9 FM ESPN. And if you listen for a minimum of 1 hour, you will get a daily entry. So start the new year off right with a slam dunk in Las Vegas. The trip includes round-trip airfare, 5 nights at a hotel in Vegas, and $20,000 in spending cash. That's $5,000 to each of the attendees to fund the ultimate viewing experience for you and your friends during the most exciting college basketball weekend of the year. So excited to announce that exciting contest. Again, download the Odyssey app, log in and listen for 1 hour each day, and you will be entered into the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Dennis Fuller's producer of the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My co-host, my partner in crime, as he is each and every Monday on the program, is the head coach and program director of Team Thad, of course, of the Nike EYBL circuit. Follow him on all socials at Dream Big Herd. Coach Herd, good day, sir.
Great day, great week.
Big weekend in sports to get to. Of course, we will overreact to what we saw this weekend. We had championship weekend, a perfect weekend for the teams participating at FedEx Forum. The Memphis Tigers, Memphis Grizzlies go 3-0 over the weekend. Tigers get perhaps their most satisfying win that we've seen of the conference slate. Jason Munns is going to join us during the next segment. We'll get all his thoughts on that. We'll really focus on the Tigers during that segment, probably focus a little bit more on football to start the show. 3:05, we'll get into the list. Heard Saturday kind of turned into a pretty wild game, or pretty wild weekend of college hoops. Lots to get to from there. We also have the slam dunk contest set. We'll also have the Grizzlies and Knicks tonight, so that's a big one to look forward to as the Grizzlies try to maintain their league best current, I should say, their current league best six-game winning streak. We'll discuss all that during hour number two. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I guess let's focus on championship weekend. We had the Commanders and the Eagles early. Eagles just absolutely decimating the Commanders, chewing them up on the ground. 7 rushing touchdowns, ties a playoff record. I believe they set a championship game record for 55 points. But I think where I really want to start overreaction Monday is, I don't know if this says something about me as a competitor, although I've always viewed myself as a pretty competitive individual. I always want to get beat like the Commanders got beat in a big-time playoff game, however you, whatever tournament game, however you want to define it. I would always rather get beat like that than get beat like the Bills did. I always have said, I have no problem tipping my cap to a better team, but what just sticks with me longer is when you have the game like the Bills had, you just think over like 15 different plays, probably plays that the public's not even thinking about. Well, if we would have just done this one thing different, that changes everything. Always, always just knock me out. Knock my teeth out. Knock me to the mat. Call the 10 count. Get me out of there.
You know what, Jeff? That's a good way of looking at it. I think I'm a tad opposite as a coach. I would rather me still be competitive, you know. And you know the crazy thing about coaches, Jeff, is, I said Brad at first, Jeff, is, you know, even when they lose by 15 or 20, when they done made it this deep, they still think it was a couple plays that would have changed
sure.
that game. That game also, you know what I mean?
Sure.
If this wouldn't happen in the second quarter, this momentum.
I mean, to your point, if you're Dan Quinn, I think that game was going a certain way because the Eagles were unstoppable on offense. The Commanders had no answers. But if you're Dan Quinn, you do look at your team and go, guys, we turned it over and gave them 28 points. We had four fumbles. They get 28 points off of it. And really, kind of if you think back in the second quarter, they get it to 14-12, and then they immediately fumble the kickoff. And so, yeah, I mean, like, I do think that you're sitting there going like, hey, we survived kind of a gauntlet. We weren't playing great, but we got it back to being a two-point game, and then we immediately just give them 7 points.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Jeff. On the back end, it's like, if you only lose by three, you're going to be thinking so long. But blowouts are kind of don't feel good either, though, when you just go. Unless you're one of them guys to feel like, I don't supposed to be here. You know, I'm playing with house money. But generally, when you're competing on the highest level, like, you know, sometimes as a basketball coach, I know this football, when the other team is up 20-30, the coach actually sit down. You feel like that is he's a better man than you at that point. Like some coach, you know, like, so it's like.
I do think that's an interesting distinction between coaching and playing. Because as a coach, your whole goal is, even as bad as it's going, let's figure out a way to make this a game. And I'm not saying that players don't think like that, but I just always think back to whenever I was in that type of leverage situation, the games that just stick with you are the games where truly one play decides it one way or the other, and you always just come up short.
No, you're right. You're right. Now, I think for Josh Allen, though, and his legacy, and for Bills fans, even though it hurts so bad, I think he still would rather it been like yesterday where he played a great game. And, you know, and it's still, even though it's the fourth time or third, so it's awful, but, you know, a blowout Josh Allen and wouldn't have done that would have been a whole nother conversation.
100%. And honestly, in the first quarter, that's kind of where I thought that game was headed. I thought we were headed to back-to-back blowouts. And the Josh basically, I can't remember if they got a first down on the very first drive, but it felt like it was three and out. And not only did it feel like it was three and out, it was the Chiefs probably dropped. They definitely dropped one interception. And then Josh threw that third down ball into coverage that could have easily been picked. I guess it could have been caught off the ricochet, but it was shaky.
Yeah.
Really shaky. They punt to the Chiefs. They pin them back at the 10, and then the Chiefs just go 90 yards. They did not have a single third down. Every single play they ran gained yardage. And then you flipped it to the Bills, and they kind of go and get a field goal, but it was another shaky one. And you're like, oh my God, the route's on. Because yet again, the Chiefs march right back down the field. But then the Chiefs mishandle the mesh point on the zone read, fumble it, Bills get the ball. And then somehow inexplicably, you look up and it's 10-7 Bills. And I'm sitting there going, how are the Bills winning this game? But there was a game script where that game, Josh throws a pick on the first series. Chiefs get a touchdown right off the bat. Then they convert that next one, and the route was on. Like, that does kind of speak to your point where sometimes it can kind of just flip like that.
No, true, like you said. And then how bad Josh, because, you know, with all of those guys as great as they are, it probably still a little nervousness early in the game, you know, no matter how old they are, how good they are. And so when he settled down in your defense, that game could have got out of hand. Like, I think he threw the ball really well in the second half. Like, that one possession where they had to keep going downfield and he threw it down the middle between two people. I was like, that's awesome. And I thought they had a real chance of winning it. Now, did you see the replay? Because I thought that one fourth down had already got confirmed a first down. And they showed where the guy on the top end was like on this side and the guy on the bottom end. I think that was definitely a big play in that.
So
the biggest maybe.
What confused me was the official. Well, first off, I thought Dawson Knox on third down got the first down, and they didn't give him the first down. That play was not reviewed. So then you go and they run the fourth down play. The far side line judge who was closest to the play, because the ball was on the right hash mark. So the far side line judge is the one that initially comes in and he spots it across the 40, which would have been a first down. The near side line judge they were like a yard and a half apart. So he's coming in clearly short of the line to gain. They then huddle up and they go with the near side line judge spot, which was short of the line to gain. What has not been explained to me was what happened in the conversation. And I'm not someone that sits there and goes, that conversation was, hey, we got to get the Chiefs the ball back.
Yeah.
What I'm more curious about was, it was a fourth down play. And previously, if you think about it, remember Josh tried to go over the top?
That's scary.
And tried to go over the top. Ball popped free. Josh picks it back up. I don't know if they ruled that he picked it back up or they ruled that the ball was dead. But what could have easily have happened is the near side official said he lost control of the ball. It's fourth down. It has to go back to the spot. And therefore, that's bringing the ball back. Because there wasn't a big discussion about where did he get. And that's the only, to me, like that was the only explanation that would have made sense. Because when they brought in pylon cam, it's like he gets at least to the line. And I don't know what happened in that conversation, but I think it was probably something along the lines of he got touched here, or maybe what he ruled was, hey, he initially had the line to gain, then he broke free, and so therefore forward progress was stopped, and then he got stopped behind the line. That's the spot we got to go with. But that was never explained.
No, and I think that was probably arguably one of the most important calls of the day, because like I said, they had just...
They're up, so the game script at that point is they're up 9 with roughly 7, I'm sorry, they're up 1 point with roughly 8 minutes left, and that would have put the ball at the 39. So they're not quite at field goal range to make it a 4-point game, but theoretically, they could have gone down, and at minimum, if they kick the extra point, it's an 8-point game. If they decide to go for two and try to make it a two-possession game, they would have had that possibility.
Yeah, and they had just converted on the last fourth down. So I think that was a huge play in it right there. But like you say, after that, and it felt like after that, I don't know if people really do this, Jeffrey, but it felt like when Kansas City did some, then Buffalo would come back. It's like they didn't start doing things right to every time they was down. When they got a chance to like double or nothing or get,
when they got the face card showing, when they're showing 11, the dealer doesn't have a face card and you would double, they never really got the shot to double down.
They never. And then to me, the three possessions before the last one, they played it great. I thought that was awesome, only getting a field goal out of Kansas City. And I was like, this is Josh Allen time. And it's like, them next three plays they was running was like, what is going on?
Well, I think clearly what happened, and Romo, who had kind of a so-so afternoon, what he did point out was that when the Chiefs got the, or I beg your pardon, when the Bills got the ball back, the Chiefs, who largely play first and second down kind of straight up, like they're not going to really send a ton of pressure, they're going to try to get you into third and eight, and then they're going to heat you up. Well, what they decided to do at that point was, screw it, on first and second down, we're trying to get a bunch of negative plays. And the Bills didn't really adjust. And they had one run for Cook that almost kind of got out the backside. And if it, on that one, it's like when everyone's blitzing, if you can get through the initial push, there's a lot of room. But then what also made no sense to me was also early on one of those downs, Josh ran the play action pass, booted out, flipped it to Cook, and then Cook got up the field quickly. I have less, like, I think whatever they were going to rule, if they would have ruled that he got the line of scrimmage and then they would have, he got the line to gain and then they would have reviewed it, I think it would have stood. I think the call was standing no matter what. What was annoying to me is the Chiefs clearly had the play figured out. Josh, on the 2-point play in the first half, they tried to do the same thing that they've been doing. And I know all the stats. Josh was 20 of 21 on 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1 on the sneak. The problem was the Chiefs had been stopping it, and all of a sudden the Bills are making no adjustment. And think like what the Chiefs did every time it was a short yardage thing. It was almost the same play. It's the fake it to the back, have a guy go out in the flat, either Pat's going to run it or he's going to flip it out, and there's nobody home. I don't understand why the Bills did not make an adjustment when that play was clearly not working. And the other thing is, they don't even do the tush push. It's just Josh sneaking it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no one behind him trying to shove him forward. Like, that's what made no sense to me either.
No, you hit it on, Jeffrey. So, that was definitely a great game. And to me, Pat Mahomes, I know his stats might be good that you haven't looked up. It's like he has been not a game manager, but it's like he only have to show his greatness when he needs to, if that makes sense. He have been all team this year. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I'm not compared to how he usually do things. Cause I, you know, he have had years where I felt like he would throw the ball all over the place all game. This year it felt like the defense actually been in control of a lot of games. And then, you know, we got Cook and he's spreading it around. There's no superstar, you know, wide receiver, quote unquote. But when it is time for the big plays or it is time for fourth quarter, and then he got to make it, and it ain't even the prettiest stuff this year, and he's still getting it done.
No, I'm in complete agreement with you. I think the other, like, biggest takeaway for me, and this really wasn't, like, an epiphany because I've largely held this opinion. We can scream until we're blue in the face about Josh being the MVP, about Burrow being the MVP, Lamar being the MVP. Time and time again, it doesn't matter who the MVP is. The best player is on the Kansas City Chiefs. He wears number 15. They took away his safety blanket. Like, I actually thought the Bills did a pretty good job against Kelsey. And the Bills basically said, like, we want to make these other guys beat us. Well, guess what Mahomes was like? Cool, I'll do that too. And, like, everyone that was screaming about some of the, you know, cheap stuff that he does running the ball where he's near the sideline trying to draw flags or he's sliding late trying to draw flags. He didn't do any of that yesterday. And I just think when you get to these games that are just so brutally close, what we see with the Kansas City Chiefs is what happens when the best quarterback is paired up with the best head coach and we're all just left screaming that they cheat. But in the end, nah, they just make more plays.
Yeah, I'm not a Chiefs fan, but, yeah, I don't get the whole cheating thing. Like, watching the game, have they got some calls here or there? But, no, I think the Chiefs have earned most of their success, the thing. And you're talking to a guy that I feel like two of their Super Bowls were supposed to be ours, that they went against the 49ers. And they didn't win until the last minute. Like, I'm almost celebrating, and every time I'm like, holy crap. You know, especially the first one. We was up like 10 points like back, this like 7-8 years ago.
In the second half.
Yeah, like fourth quarter. I'm thinking it's over with, you know. And then the last one, we kicked the field goal. He come back within 50 seconds and do so. But without it being said, he's talented. Andy Reid has done a great job. I hope guys like Bill Belichick and other guys that's great can go redefine themselves, because now he's coming to a situation, as great as Philly is and as great as the coaches they have hired since him, he got a chance to be, this is the ultimate payback, be a thorn in their side and do this again.
Not only again, you literally get to do something that has never been done. No one has ever won three straight Super Bowls. We've had teams win three straight NFL championships, but no one's won three straight Super Bowls. They can do it.
And nobody has done it in any sport since 2000 with the Lakers. Do you feel like if Pat Mahomes win three in a row, some people say that I know it's early, but that even almost will mean more long-term than Brady seven. They think if Mahomes get like five.
Worse. I guess here's the real question. I don't think four is enough because it's 4-7, and that's still – you're just slightly past half.
Yeah.
Now, what is fair to say is, yeah, that's 4 out of 8. The other thing with Brady is not only is it the 6 in New England, it's the fact that he went elsewhere and got another, and also like at the peak of – was it more Brady? Was it more Belichick? Who wins the divorce? He goes and he wins with Tampa Bay. Like, that's kind of an extra feather in the cap. I don't think four is enough, but I legitimately think if Patrick Mahomes retired at the end of, if he wins this Super Bowl and retires there, I think he has every claim to be the second best quarterback to ever play. And like, I get it. Montana's got four with no loss, losses. Like, I know all this, but it's like, we are at the point where he has been a starting quarterback for 8 seasons in the NFL. His worst seasons are twice losing in the AFC Championship game and once losing in the Super Bowl. We're at the point with Mahomes where we can literally say, just set your clocks to it. They're going to be in the AFC title game. That's the floor. And even like, the problem is with Brady, it's like there's 20 years, and so there's so much more ups, downs, because Brady basically goes, he wins 3 in 4 years, and then they don't win another one for a decade. And they lost 2 Super Bowls in that time frame. I don't think he has a case even winning this year for the greatest of all time, but we're now at the point where it's like, how many more does he really need to even have a case? Because Brady's case is largely the longevity of his career, but like Brady has 7 in, I think, was it, what did he play, 22 total seasons?
Did he play 22?
Let's see, because I thought it was 20 in New England and then 2 in Tampa. Let's see. Total seasons. God, his Wikipedia page is like it's legitimately a novel. All right. Okay, so he starts in 01 as a starter. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, injured season. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. 22 total seasons. And 2 of the 22 seasons, 1, he was a rookie, he played sparingly behind Bledsoe. He takes over in year 2. And then he also has the 08 season where he gets hurt in the first quarter, tears his ACL. So of the 20 opportunities to win a Super Bowl, he won 7 of them. And Mahomes, if he were to win this one, would be 4-8. I still think he's got to get within, like, I think he's got to maybe even get to 6, because, like, in the end, that's Mahomes is going to go up against the same thing that Peyton Manning always went up against, in which you're going to have a statistical case, because I used to always point out, Brady and Peyton played 5 times in the playoffs. Peyton finished 3-2 against Brady, but this other stuff is so overwhelming. And I think that was kind of the other thing that I realized last night. It's like, we can argue about MVPs. We can argue about player of the years or whatnot. It's like, that's really not what matters. It's like, you realize it this weekend. What matters is who's lifting the hardware. Because statistically, this was one of Mahomes' most underwhelming years. And yet you still realize we've gotten to the playoffs. It's like, if he's got the ball with a chance to go win the game, you should be scared.
No. And so, I agree with you with everything you said. This is where I pose it in a different way. Yes, Brady will probably be the greatest quarterback ever, But I think it's fair to say, and me talking to old school guys that have been watching it for a long time, even statistically, I think it's fair to say that Pat Mahomes is the most talented quarterback that ever played the game. With what he's doing, it's almost like, okay, Emmitt Smith played forever, right?
Sure.
But everybody know Barry Sanders is better than Emmitt Smith. Like, no matter how many records Emmitt Smith got and he played 22 years, if you ask anybody in the NFL around that time, just raw talent, they would say, dude, Barry Sanders did it with a weaker line. Barry Sanders did it with half the years, and he still is up there like top five.
So the only problem I have with saying the most talented, because clearly Mahomes is a different type of talent than Brady was. I think it almost does a disservice to Mahomes because we're just saying he's just a talent. Whereas I think there are guys that are just talents. Part of my biggest problem with Herbert is I think he's talented, but I don't think he knows how to play the position at the same level and the same skill that Mahomes, Burrow, Lamar, and Josh do. And it's kind of the Aaron Rodgers argument. In terms of in his prime, the scariest quarterback, at least, I mean, I'm an NFC guy, but when Rodgers would take that deep drop and take that massive crow hop, and you knew he was just about to uncork it, it's one of the scariest things you could see if your team was playing it, because you just assumed it was going to be a 70-yard bomb. There was nothing you can do with it. But if it's just a talent, I think Aaron Rodgers is more talented than Brady and Peyton by a mile. But at the same time, like, he's nowhere near as accomplished. So, like, there's some disconnect. And while I think Mahomes is a special type of talent, and all you need to know about him is he's now changing the way that the game is coached, which I also think is a massive problem, particularly at the youth level. Let me tell you what, people. Y'all want to go see some bad quarterback play? Go out on a Friday night and just go pick a high school game and watch how many kids that aren't Patrick Mahomes that are trying to be Patrick Mahomes. And I think what it's bled into is because Mahomes can do so many special things. People are like, we've gotten obsessed with the off-platform throws and the having your body never be set. And it's like teaching really bad. It's like, he can do it because he is special. He's touched by God. Like, but there's only one of him. And I also think, like, there's this weird thing with quarterback where it's, unlike so many other positions in sports, there's not really a formula yet. I think if there were a formula, we'd be better at scouting it. And there's obviously talent that goes into it, but Brady's nowhere near the most physically gifted person to ever play the sport. And, like, I don't know. Like, to me, it's like he's now on this path to where I think forever Patriots fans were saying, like, it's insane to even consider that what he's doing touches Brady. We're about 60 minutes away to being like, all right, what is going to be the point in which we say the throne is yours, young man?
I mean, I think in 2 weeks we're going to start really opening our mouth about it. Like you say, the talent is almost, like you say, not a Lamar Jackson, but Lamar Jackson mixed with a Peyton Manning. I mean, he is.
I've always felt like he is, because he's faster than you realize. Because that's the other thing people don't, like, you and I have talked about this. When you go to an NBA game, just realizing how freakishly athletic, like, the seventh guy is on a generic team, when you see how big he is, how fast he is, how well he moves, and you realize, like, that's just kind of an average NBA guy. It's kind of the same thing. It's like Patrick Mahomes is, in college, is like a scrambler. In the NFL, like, he runs effectively, but you don't put him at the same level as Lamar. But he runs well enough. He also is, I think for a while, people thought he was kind of like Favre, in which he's just out there kind of flinging it around, but he's not manipulating defenses. You realize now, like, he's in complete control of the game. I just think he's a different animal. Like, I think part of the problem is when we try to come up with comps, he's changed the position probably more than anyone else since Peyton. Because Peyton is the one that really changes quarterback to offensive coordinator on the field and having him do everything at the line of scrimmage. Well, Brady's more in that mold, but Brady comes a little bit after. I'm not saying that Peyton's better than Brady. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
Mahomes has now completely changed what everybody looks for in quarterback, because if you are a traditional pocket passer, no one's even looking at you. Well, he can't extend plays. He can't make the off-script play. Now everyone's sitting there going, if you can't do that, you can't play the position. And Mahomes has changed it in the same way that Peyton changed it, with having the quarterback essentially run the offense at the line of scrimmage.
No, you said something then. I think they all fair arguments. Like, so when you're talking about just pure talent, right, not potential but talent, people who are actually doing it, statistics do get brought up and they do mean a lot. Now, I know you didn't debate it with people like this. There are some people who don't debate and put championships. And I know it sounds crazy, but I know some people that say, listen, if certain people had better teams or better organizations or better, you know, not to take this the wrong way, some people may feel like if Saquon Barkley was with a better organization earlier in his career, he might
get paid
more money, might be an MVP.
Well, I think one thing that's definitely obvious, Saquon, like, this is my whole deal and why it even hurts more. Saquon on a bad team, it doesn't matter. Saquon was awesome for the Giants. We had 1 year where we won 9 games. But you put Saquon with the Eagles, and all of a sudden it changes the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've added him to already a very good roster, and he no longer has to go up against defenses that are literally... It's the same thing we saw with Derrick Henry this year. Like, everyone was thinking, Derrick Henry with the Titans, he's washed. Derrick looked washed to you this year?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's like, yeah, you pair him with Lamar, you pair him with the Ravens, and all of a sudden, oh, there's still plenty in the tank. And so I think running back makes... That's kind of the difference to me. It's like between running back and quarterback. Special running back, Barry Sanders is the perfect example. Like, those Lions teams sucked.
Oh, bad.
I mean, I think he won one playoff game.
Bad.
But you put special quarterback on average team, and you get Jaden Daniels and the Commanders going to the NFC Championship game, or you get Joe Burrow a play away from a Super Bowl. Like, for all these teams, like, to me, like, that's the key difference. Like, had Saquon stayed with the Giants, we still would have sucked.
Mm-hmm.
But you put Saquon with the Eagles, and all of a sudden, now that he doesn't have to, everyone's just sitting there going, we just have to stop him. Well, good luck, because he's a bad dude.
Yeah, and so when I was mentioning talent, sometimes I say, not saying Tom Brady ain't the best, because he is, but you look at a guy, like I said, I don't know if he that much greater than Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is very, very good. But then even a guy like Dan Marino, I think he's top three most talented quarterbacks ever. You know, honestly, Jesse, we talking about talent.
I did this last week, I think, with Tim Murray.
Okay.
If you go and look at 5,000-yard seasons, I think he is like eight. He has like eighth in like 1984. Every other person on the list up until the 30s is post 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And the game, like, and so it's like that 5,000 year 1984 is like 10,000 yards. Like, it's insane.
Because they didn't open it up. Correct. And got the rules. And
correct.
Because the only person that did it in this era, I feel like, as they was changing the rules before, was like somebody who people don't appreciate, like Drew Brees, right?
Brees.
Yeah. So
he's a victim. I can say this as a short guy. Brees is a victim of height supremacy.
Yeah.
He's short, so we don't take him as seriously as we should.
Yeah, we just treat him like what a better Doug Flutie.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
like, isn't that sweet? He's won a Super Bowl. Like,
oh, he's a bad boy.
Yes.
Too, yeah. I mean, it might be. I ain't gonna say there's no gap between the guys we're talking about and him, but he is probably still about. I mean, we're talking about NFL royalty now when we start talking about Montana, Manning,
there's something
Mahomes
about when you win the multiple Brady Super Bowls. Like, they're, that's a different level.
Well, I don't put, but then that's when talent do come in there too, because, and I, we're not knocking the Giants. They, I don't think people put Eli in the supreme category.
But it's because of the, as I'll always defend, played outdoors in cold weather.
Okay.
And yes, I know people say Brady did that. But he also played in a very different offense. But I always go back to Eli's biggest problem is he was willing when they were down to throw a bunch of interceptions. And so his numbers start to wane that way. But if you look at every receiver he ever had, every one of their career years was when Eli was the quarterback. From Odell to Plex to the other Steve Smith, to Hakeem Nicks, Mario Manningham. Like, but you're 100% right. The regular season's what holds Eli back. He didn't have the consistent regular season success. He didn't dominate his division. I think he won the division twice, maybe three times. But like the other guys that we're talking about, they dominate their division, they dominate the regular season, and then they have the postseason success on top of it.
Yeah, and I guess if I'm Eli, he did it when it counted. He put his money on the line when it was time to put the money on the line, and I think he's a very smart. But for some reason, when I look at talent, I still don't really put him in the category of the elites of the elite, which is crazy because, like you say, he won two Super Bowls. But even with that, I still put him behind on Drew Brees, though.
Yeah, I think it's the consistency. I think that's a huge part of it. I'll always remember – you live over here now, or you live by there now, at Germantown Parkway in Trinity Commons, okay, where that McAllister's is now.
Okay, over there. Yeah.
There was a Sprint store, represent, for all my Sprint people back in the day. And who was it? There was he played at Memphis, and he was a fullback. Who was it? He was on the Giants. And this was right before Eli won the first Super Bowl. And we were talking because the heat was really turning up on him. Peyton had just won a Super Bowl and the heat's turning up on Eli. It's time. And we were talking to the guy and he's like, man, Eli doesn't care. Eli's rich. Like, he's like, you guys can talk all you want. It's like, that's kind of a different, you know what I mean? Like, it's a different level of like, say what you want. Like, in the end, like that's kind of always my biggest problem with if Shador is going to be the Giants' next quarterback. I think Shador hears everything. And I just think if you're going to be the quarterback in New York, like, part of that has to be like, man, he doesn't care one way or the other. All right, speaking of hearing everything, Memphis Tigers. We've had a very different Penny this year, and I think finally we got the result we'd been looking for yesterday against UAB. Let's talk about that with Jason Munns next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zen Sports is rolling out the VIP Players Club sweepstakes for January, and the prizes are raised to a whole new level. This month, one grand prize winner will win a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game and $10,000 cash, or an alternative prize of $15,000 cash. You have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. Plus, you can earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You'll still have a shot to win one of five smaller prizes, which will either grant you a $1,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game or $250 cash. Also, for new customers who sign up using my referral code JeffTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you'll receive 500 bonus entries in addition to the entries earned from the value of your qualifying bet. Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of rules. Also, you can earn a $100 no danger first wager on your first bet. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Jason Munns is the Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on Twitter on X at Munsley. Make sure you check out the CAA's Tiger basketball podcast. Joins us each and every Monday. Munns, what are we listening to?
What's up, Jeffrey? This is the great Ann Peebles covering the great Isley Brothers. It's Your Thing.
All right, my man. Always some good vibes. And there were some good vibes yesterday out at FedEx Forum. I don't want to, like, say, okay, best win of the season, because we've seen other great wins. There was something about yesterday, though, that I couldn't quite put my finger on. Is it just maybe as simple as, like, most satisfying win since the calendars turned to January?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably why it feels, well, it's the first time they've got to 100 points, so there's that. It's their highest, I think they shot, I don't know, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but it's like they shot something like 65% or 62% from the field, which is a season high, 24 assists, a season high, 100 points, a season high, like everything just about yesterday, including the fact that it was against the preseason favorite to win the league, it was against the preseason pick to win player of the year, and Yaxel Lindeborg, like, it just had everything you could possibly want, and the fact that it was coming on the heels of, you know, a handful of games, roughly, where it did not look good, it did not feel good, necessarily, even. You know, you can throw in the loss to Temple in that handful of games, and, you know, it's just like, yeah, they did it against FAU, but that was way back on January 2nd, and that was on the road, and it was against an FAU team that was not expected to be very good and isn't very good. You know, UAB was coming into Memphis having won 5 games in a row and 7 of their last 8, prompting Andy Kennedy to declare after a 3-point home win against lowly UTSA that they're one of the hottest teams in the country. It just, there was so much that was all sort of packed into the formula that, you know, but to your point, yeah, it's been a while since Memphis has actually dominated a game, and that's what they did. And I think that has a lot to do with why it feels so good.
I think the other thing that stood out to me, obviously the cutting down of turnovers, like, that was part of it, but I've largely felt like, okay, that's mostly been a focus thing. I did wonder if the rebounding issue was just going to be an issue all year, because that's a personnel thing.
Yeah.
I thought there were two key differences. You had, obviously, Dane yesterday moving back into the starting lineup, but between Jordan, Dane, and Musa, they get 23 of the 37 rebounds. Like, I just thought there was a concerted effort from the bigs. Like, we got to go get the ball.
Yeah, that was the other part of this challenge, is UAB came into the game top 10 in the country in rebounding. You know, so like, yes, UAB did not have the super high net. They weren't top 25. You know, they played kind of like crap in the non-conference. But you know what? They also came into your building tied with you for first place in the conference standings. So like, you know, again, like there were so many reasons why, like it was all set up with a lot of reasons for Memphis to be motivated to play this game. And if we've learned anything about this team, it's that when they are properly motivated, they play really, really well 9 times out of 10. Maybe even more than that. Maybe 99 times out of 100. But yes, like to your point, the rebounding was starting to feel like a fundamental flaw. And then for them to go out and, again, you had the motivation is the thing that I keep going back to. Like, you had Dane Danger going back into the start lineup. So, like, I feel like that gave him some extra juice. You had Nick Jourdain, who just kind of played like his hair was on fire yesterday, but, like, under control hair on fire. Like, it was arguably one of his best games of the season. And then Musa Cisse coming off the bench doing good things, 9 points, 8 rebounds, you know, some blocks. I think Jourdain even had 2 or 3 blocks. So, yeah, that's super encouraging. If you are a Memphis fan, yesterday was super encouraging for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is out rebounding a team that came in here, one of the 10 best, rebounding teams in the country.
What do you make of the decision to insert Dane back into the starting lineup?
Well, I mean, you know, it's easy to say today that it was a stroke of genius. And you know what? It was getting easier to say that it would have been the right move, you know, before Penny actually made that move. Because, you know, since the win over Ole Miss, where Musa played out of his mind, he's been kind of just okay, and in some cases not even that. So it made sense to do it. I just didn't think it was going to make that much sense. Like, I did not think that it was going to be such a resounding, you know. And again, and don't get me wrong, Dane, and I wrote about this today, Dane has been coming on strong lately. Like, this is, I think, 7 of his last 8 or 8 of his last 9 games he's scored in double figures, and he's rebounding the ball better. You know, the one game that he didn't score in double figures, which happened to be this past last Thursday against Wichita State in that debacle of a game, he only scored 3 points, but he did still have 8 rebounds. But no, I thought, yeah, like, I just didn't realize it was going to be such a smashing move, you know, that for him to come out there and give you 21-8. And, I mean, he was doing it in so many different ways, too, like, you know, layups, dunks, turnaround jump hooks. Like, he was doing it all. He was 10 of 12 from the floor. You know, he was running the floor well. It was just well, and then of course there was the I don't know what we call it,
the flagrant, the I guess.
No, I'm talking about
the mail, whatever, the dust up. I don't know what would we call that.
I don't know what I'm talking about. His first dunk of the game, where he rode the Axel Lindeborg's shoulders, you know, and did not get a technical. Mm-hmm. It was something to behold, live and in person. And it was almost even better on the all the replays and stuff to see Nick Jourdain's reaction everything else. It just, the game yesterday had everything you could possibly want if you were a Tigers fan. But anyway, yeah, no, Dane, Penny said after the game that Dane is in the starting lineup, like, from now on. He's not, you know, and until further notice, he's in the starting lineup for good. And I think that's the right call. Because, again, this, like, yeah, he had 21-8, but this is not because he's in the starting lineup. Like, he was averaging somewhere around 15 points a game over the previous, you know, 8 games going into that game. So it's the right call to get him in there.
I thought another big part of yesterday also was P.J. Haggerty's first half. And obviously we just discussed Dane's motivation. I don't view it as a slight. Like, in the end, Yaxel Lindenborg was a good player that was returning to a team. Like, that's kind of the recipe for preseason player of the year.
Yeah.
I just felt like P.J. Haggerty was kind of on a mission to be like, all right, you're preseason player of the year. Let me show you what the real preseason player of the year looks like.
Yeah, how good can Memphis be if – because, like, if you go back and rewatch that first half, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I can look it up.
I got it. What do you want? Like, which numbers do you want?
First half point total for – PJ Haggerty. I think I'm getting close.
13. He was 5 of 9, including he was 5 of 9 in the first half. He also had 4 assists, only 1 turnover, 5 rebounds in 18 minutes.
Okay. Interesting. See, I thought he had fewer points and more assists in the first half, and I was going to say, like, because, you know, his sort of blueprint this season has been, you know, more often than not, his first halves are not, like, eye-popping. It's the second halves where he really, really comes on and you know, turns on the afterburners. And what I was going to say was, you know, if you look at his full line, he had 23 points and 9 assists, and I think also 6 rebounds. So he was knocking on the door of a triple-double yesterday. But, like, how good can this team – just think about, like, I started thinking about this earlier today, like, with Dane Danger back in the starting lineup giving you, I mean, he's probably not going to score 21 points a game from here on out just because he's back in the starting lineup, but if you get 15-8 from Danger the rest of the way, and you've got P.J. Haggerty, not only is he still giving you scoring, P.J. Haggerty, second in the country, by the way, in points per game. But he's also distributing the way he distributed yesterday, or even anywhere close to the way he distributed yesterday. Like, how much better this team can be? It's kind of scary when you, if I'm a future opponent of the Memphis Tigers, the way I look at yesterday is, man, it potentially went from we might have a shot to we're probably going to have to play perfect, and maybe even that's not going to be good enough.
Did yesterday surprise you?
No. No. And I know that's been a big topic of conversation, because of the way things had gone after the FAU game. It was a 4-point win over North Texas. It was only a 4-point win against East Carolina. It was the loss to Temple. It was the game at Charlotte where they were up huge and only won, you know, they let it get out of control in the last 4 minutes. And then the game against whatever you want to call whatever it was on Thursday against Wichita State. And it's not just, I'm not talking about just Memphis like that.
No, that was something to, that first half was disgusting.
The first 25 minutes of that game very rarely resembled basketball.
Yeah.
It was awful. But so anyway, you had those string of games where it's like, you know, you start to wonder, you start to worry. You know, I don't blame anybody who was starting to feel like maybe this is what this team actually is, as opposed to what we all saw in Maui and at Clemson and at home against Ole Miss. I was not in that, and I am not in that group. Like, I thought it was a prolonged slump, but I felt like it was just a slump. And the other thing that this team has shown us is, if they've shown us anything, it's that, and this goes back to what I was saying before about motivation, is they play up and down to their competition. And again, you know, UAB was coming in here tied for first. They were the preseason pick and everything. Like, there were too many, you know, things on a checklist for me to think. Like, I was actually texting with Giannato a couple of days ago, and I asked him, I said, would it surprise you at all if Memphis wins by 15 plus against UAB? And he, you know, like, we went from there, but I told him that I would not be surprised. And so, if that answers your question.
No, I think that's kind of the other thing that I've been, as I'm trying to, like, look at everything holistically, like, across the board. Have we figured out, is there, like, a set number of losses? And obviously this all requires context, because it's not just a set number of losses. It's like, okay, who did they lose to? Where was the loss and whatnot? But it's like, have we been able to gauge, like, how many losses they can afford and still be a top five seed? Because that's kind of what's really confusing to me. It's like, you even see yesterday, which was impressive, it largely has, like, no effect on the metrics. But I would also point out, the stronger part of the Tigers' resume is the wins, the quality of wins. Like, it's not fading. And so that part of their resume is holding up, whereas I just don't know if the net's going to be, like, what ends up actually determining what their seed liner is or isn't.
No, I don't think it will. And I think that's going to be the case for a lot of teams. You know, yeah. I was looking at this before, like,
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.